Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Bill Press Pod and today's podcast, or maybe we should call it a podcast, because that's what we're going to be talking about. The stunning rise of legalized marijuana. 5 years ago, you would never have thought that same-sex marriage would be legally recognized in all 50 states. But it is today. And today, you might never think that the recreational use of marijuana would ever be legally recognized in all 50 states. But you know what? 5 years from now, it may very well be. Medical use of marijuana has long been approved in a majority of states, but state approval of recreational use of marijuana is now moving quickly across the country. So we thought it was a good time to take a deep dive into the world of pot. How many states have legalized recreational use of marijuana? How's it going? What problems, if any, have been encountered? And which states are about to join the club? We sat down with Justin Strakel, political director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, at NORML's headquarters in downtown Washington. Hi, Justin. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Bill. It's great to see you as well. Thanks for having me.
So one of your members, staffers that I've known for a long time, Keith Stroop, told me that when NORML started in 1970, there was 12% support for legalized recreational use of marijuana. What is it today? It's gotten a little better, hasn't it?
It's much higher. you know, we're very fortunate. As the public is continuing to engage on this issue, we are now seeing 68% of Americans supporting the outright legalization and regulation
across
of adult
the board.
Use. Majorities of Democrats, majorities of Independents, and since 2017, majorities of Republicans.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how many states now have moved to, we're talking recreational use of marijuana, to make it legal?
Well, we like to say responsible adult use.
Thank you.
But recreational works too, because I enjoy it. We are now at 11 states, and the District of Columbia have legalized the responsible adult possession and consumption of marijuana. Vermont and D.C. have not set up a regulated marketplace. So it's legal to grow your own, but you can't go to a store and buy it yet. And then 33 states and the District of Columbia have legalized the medical use of marijuana with a doctor's recommendation.
So are all of those in those states so far by initiative, not by legislation?
All but two. Vermont became the first state to legislatively depenalize marijuana. That's what I mean when I say it's legal to grow and possess and consume. And then just earlier this year, Illinois became the first state to legislatively legalize and set up a regulated marketplace.
Right.
So we expect Illinois' marketplace, you'll be able to travel to the land of Lincoln and buy marijuana next year.
And Colorado was number one, correct?
Well, Colorado and Washington. Right, Colorado's Washington. Election results got called first, but Washington did the same day.
Yeah. So, you know, we heard ahead of time, of course, we've heard such fear tactics against the use of marijuana for years and years and years, but we heard particularly in Colorado and Washington all these horror stories about what might happen, what would happen, right? What has happened? I mean, let's talk, for example, people said this is going to be an increase in violent crime.
We have not seen an increase in violent crime. I've dug through the crosstabs of crime data coming out of Colorado. There was one blip where arson went up by 50% because that's in a comparing time periods from there were two instances to there were three instances. Other than that, you know, we see crime down across the board. And that's part of just, you know, the state of Colorado growing a more vibrant and strong economy that are addressing the issues of Coloradans. which is including legal marijuana and the investments that it's making into public education through the additional tax
resources. Right. We also heard there's going to be a lot of driving while stoned, right? A lot of arrests driving while stoned.
There have been an uptick in the documented cases of impaired consumption on marijuana, but it's important to recognize that when Colorado legalized, they changed the way that they determine impairment, and they changed the way that they conduct drug testing on the roads. It used to be whenever there was a highway fatality, the arresting officer at the scene would make a determination as to whether or not they'd do a drug test. Now they do one every time. So, you know, a lot of
they're going to get more.
Absolutely. It's like you're going fishing versus dragging the pond with a net. And, you know, so we have seen an uptick in the number of correlated incidences. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our opponents like to say, you know, paint this image that the highways of Colorado run red with the blood of the innocent. But in real numbers, overall highway fatalities have gone down per capita. So the streets of Colorado are safer today than they were before they legalized marijuana.
And, of course, one of the big arguments was that just rampant teenage use, right? This is going to get into the schools, you know, grade schools, middle schools, high schools.
Yeah.
Any evidence of that?
No, absolutely none. In fact, we now have state-issued reports that show that teen use rates is either staying consistent prior to legalization or slightly declining. What we are seeing is a huge decline in the perceived access to marijuana. And that's because we're taking marijuana out of the hands of the street corner dealers and we're putting it behind counters where, you know, the business checks someone's ID. So, you know, we're now seeing, I mean, I remember I was in high school just 15 years ago. It was easier to get marijuana than it was to get alcohol. You know, and it's that same kind of concept because we're putting in mechanisms of control.
Do you have any numbers on whether or not in the adult population there are more people now enjoying marijuana because it is legal and it's accessible?
Yeah. No, there is an increase in reported consumption, and the largest increase is actually among the senior population. And you know, I may agree on this, but the majority of seniors actually oppose the legalization of marijuana. But we're seeing in states where it's reforming that now that it's no longer against the rules, now the greatest generation is willing to say, you know what, if it's not illegal, I'll try it.
Yeah.
And they're trying it and they're enjoying it. And now in these regulated marketplaces, they can get teas, they can get creams for their arthritis. Mm-hmm. I mean, consumption comes in a lot of forms.
And they vote.
And they vote.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So the uptick, I guess, of course, has been revenue, particularly for the states. Is that across the board that we've seen? I've heard the stories about Colorado. Tell us about that.
No, I mean, all the states are levying a sales tax in various points of the whole scale of production. But, you know, it is a sizable amount of money. In Colorado, they're reinvesting it into the schools. Other states are choosing to do different things with the tax revenue. You know, one of the things that we think is really important is that some of that tax revenue be used to expunge the criminal records of those who have had marijuana offenses that prevent them from getting things like jobs and access to housing and healthcare, et cetera. So there's a lot of things that these states can do, and especially at a time when we see state revenues so craving money these days.
Right.
Lot to invest in. In Colorado, Governor Jared Polis, probably the most pro-marijuana reform governor in the country, is ecstatic to announce every time that there's a new school that's being reconstructed or built with marijuana money.
Right. Is there any parallel effort in these states? You mentioned some of the people who are, particularly a lot of young black kids, in prison for long terms because of marijuana use. Now that the marijuana is legal, has there been any parallel effort for sentencing reform and get some of these people out of jail?
There is, and it is growing in momentum, and it's growing in power and growing in effectiveness. When the states of Colorado and Washington legalized, they didn't prioritize those kind of reparative justice elements. In fact, when the state of Washington first legalized, you were unable to get a job sweeping the floor at a dispensary if you had a marijuana possession charge on your record. You know, absolutely absurd. But there were political calculations made at the time, and now it's a very different political climate to make those kind of calculations. And that's why we saw when Illinois legalized, they voted to automatically expunge the criminal records of every single person who had a nonviolent marijuana conviction. And we think that's incredibly important. And we're also seeing a big movement that's growing, particularly spearheaded by a few organizations like the Minority Cannabis Business Association, to prioritize access to avenues into the industry for work and for ownership of dispensaries and the whole new economy that's growing for the exact same communities that have been targeted under the racist enforcement of criminalization.
So this certainly opened up enormous new opportunities for businesses to get people to get into the marijuana business, let's say. Give us some idea of what's the nature of that business. Are we talking about small business? Are we talking about mom-and-pop operations?
It depends on the regulatory environment of the market we're talking about. I mean, a lot of these states have gone dramatically different routes when it comes to the issuances of licensing. For example, in West Virginia, their medical program, just to be considered for the privilege of obtaining a license for a dispensary or for a cultivation facility, it's a $50,000 non-refundable application fee.
Whoa.
So I don't know a whole lot of small businesses and entrepreneurs who have $50,000 cash on hand just to roll the dice. You know, the guys like that, they're who are rolling the dice on that kind of money are going to Vegas. So it's not the mom and pop shops. I think it's incredibly important that we recognize as we reform marijuana policy that it's a commodity. And just like any other business, we need to have sense of regulations and controls, but we don't need to regulate it like it's plutonium. And some of the barriers to entry have just been, you know, completely unscalable for entrepreneurs.
And some of the criticism we hear is that consequently, it's tough for, again, a small business mom pop operation or people of diversity, people of color to get in this business.
Yeah. Now, marijuana reform will not solve systemic racism. I mean, marijuana reform alone can't undo the history of redlining or Jim Crow or segregation. But it can be a point to address those issues. And we're seeing programs that are attempting to do so through what's called equity licensing in places like Oakland and LA and others, where they are trying to prioritize to ensure that impacted communities get at least a percentage of the licenses that are issued. But unfortunately, those programs are being constrained by the practical realities of federal prohibition, which includes, you know, lack of access to capital. Because right now, every single marijuana business owner is a felon, the degree of a heroin dealer under the eyes of the federal government. You know, kingpins, if you will. So banks are not able to issue credit. So if you don't have capital, like cash on hand in a duffel bag, ready to go pay your, you know, contractors, ready to pay your workers, then you can't play in the market.
I was just going to get to that because there's this built-in hurdle for them, right?
Yeah.
That they are considered felons just by opening this business. So how is that an entire offline, if you will, underground economy in terms of where do they keep the revenue they get? How do they pay their employees?
Yeah.
How do they pay their bills?
Yeah.
How do they pay their taxes? Or do they pay taxes if they're a criminal enterprise?
They are paying. Most of them are paying their taxes. You know, there's this tax penalty known as 280E. And it's essentially the same policy of how they got Al Capone, saying if you are profiting off of a Schedule I controlled substance, you still have to pay your taxes. Bless the IRS. They crossed all the T's to make sure that they could charge drug dealers with an extra crime. But what we're seeing is these companies, they have to pay all their taxes, but they don't get standard business deductions because it's an illegal product. So they're not getting the same kind of incentives that every other business gets to provide health care for their employees. They're not getting the same kind of write-offs for capital improvements, bringing on veterans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of which we do so much of our incentives through with nudges. And right now they're just not able to. Senator Merkley actually tagged along with a cannabis business as they were going to pay their taxes. And the IRS sets up sets up different points around the state at different times of year to be collection centers.
This is in the state of Oregon.
This is in the state of Oregon, where they wouldn't tell the cannabis business until just the day before, because they were coming in with duffel bags full of cash. And I mean, and that's one of the biggest complaints I hear from state lawmakers that they're considering putting in regulated marketplaces, saying, how are we supposed to know what these businesses are doing? They're not a part of our integrated economy. And that's just one of the many issues we need to address through federal policy.
So the big hurdle still is, mm-hmm. despite the success at the state level, the big mm-hmm. hurdle is yeah. That marijuana is still classified as a Schedule I drug yep. by the federal government, which means mm-hmm. it's addictive and has zero medical advantage, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep. No, and it's that simple.
What's the prognosis for changing that?
Well, the prognosis for removing marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act is not great as long as the Senate Majority Leader is Mitch McConnell. He has expressed absolutely no interest in addressing the scheduling of marijuana. But ironically, just last year, he shepherded the descheduling of marijuana as long as it has 0.3% THC or less, what we refer to as hemp. But the CSA now says marijuana, as long as it has 0.3% or less, is legal, 0.4% or more, illegal. He's shown no interest in changing that. Now, he is one of the most effective legislators of our time, right? Or in history.
Sadly.
Say what you will about him, and I got a lot to say on a different topic. But perhaps he'll see that the political winds are changing and he will change his calculation. But he has made no intention that he's made no indication that he will. But there are some technical fixes, some little tweaks here and there that he might be amenable to, such as addressing that banking issue that we mentioned mm-hmm. just a moment ago, where, you know, because it would not only help the cannabis companies, but it would also help provide some certainty to the hemp markets. And the hemp markets is something that Mitch McConnell champions for the farmers in Kentucky to bring back some jobs to his state.
Well, there is some progress along that line in the House recently.
Yes. No, the House of Representatives are leading the way right now. We just had a vote a couple weeks ago that was 321 to 105. And it was, I'm sorry, 103. Right? Yeah. It was a really, really strong showing. All but one Democrat voted in favor of it. 91 Republicans voted for it, and the independent Justin Amash. And what this bill would do is just essentially create what we refer to as a safe harbor for banks that choose to engage in business with marijuana companies. So it's not a panacea. It's not going to solve all the problems. But it would, if enacted, would allow local banks would mainly get into it. I don't mm-hmm. think Wells Fargo or Bank of America want to mess with the Controlled Substances Act. But local regional banks and credit unions who desperately need to bring more clients in would look to this.
But that's huge. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge victory for the cannabis community, if you will, and for pot caucus in the House of Representatives, which is
Cannabis Caucus. Cannabis
Caucus, which is growing in numbers. I know yes. many members of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure this is something they've been working for a long time.
Yes. Now, we had such an incredibly diverse coalition of members of Congress and of groups pushing this bill. You know, I did not expect to see the American Bankers Association at our weekly meetings, but there they were. And they really helped us get it over the finish line for this very narrow legislation. But this narrow legislation legitimizes the retail sale of marijuana in America. And that, to that point, you know, 45% of the Republican caucus, mm-hmm. nearly 100% of the Democratic caucus in the House, all voted to legitimize the retail sale of marijuana.
Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable.
Again, talking with Justin Strakel here from NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, around since 1970. We'll take a quick break. Today's podcast brought to you by the Laborers International Association, the Laborers Union, under the leadership of President Terry O'Sullivan. They are literally rebuilding America from the ground up. And, in fact, that's their website, LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, LIUNABuildsAmerica.org. Check out their website. We thank them for their good work in the construction industry and for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Justin, thanks again for joining us here, and thanks for your good work at Normal. So under President Obama, I remember being worried that Eric Holder and President Obama would clamp down on Colorado and Washington then mm-hmm. and then other states. And they chose not to. They chose, in effect, to look the other way and say, if states mm-hmm. – correct me if I'm wrong.
They did eventually come to that.
Eventually, right, right. Yes. Yeah. I was worried. What is the Trump mm-hmm. organization? I know mm-hmm. Jeff Sessions said, 180 degrees in the opposite direction. Yeah. What's been the reality of mm-hmm. Enforcement and yeah. cracking down on states under the Trump administration?
Well, first, to address your point about the Obama administration, during his first term, there was no legal adult use marijuana. Mm-hmm. And the DEA did routinely go and shut down medical dispensaries around the country. You know, it was targeted. It wasn't a systemic crackdown, but it was targeted enforcement actions. And it wasn't until 2013, after Colorado and Washington voted to legalize adult use, that the administration put forward what we refer to as the Cole Memo, which represented, you know, an uneasy detente between federal prohibition and states' mm-hmm. legalization. And it laid out 8 guidelines saying, you know, as long as we don't hear about violations of these 8 guidelines, we're not going to prioritize enforcement, which included but were limited to, you know, interstate trafficking of state legal products across state borders, distribution to minors, you know, those kind of very, very pragmatic things. That memo stayed in effect until January 4th, 2018, when Jeff Sessions decided, as the Attorney General, decided to rescind it. You know, Jeff Sessions may be the most reefer madness stricken individual in the United States. He loved to talk about how much he hated marijuana. Yeah. And claim that good people do not smoke marijuana. You know, we were really worried that the Attorney General, or now previous Attorney General Sessions, was going to take action. But in the end, he ended up being all bark and no bite. And we were successful in getting, you know, really emboldening our congressional allies to vigorously speak out against this. Mm-hmm. We saw an unprecedented level of action out of Senator Cory Gardner, where he decided to hold up nominations for various spots at the DOJ. until we could get some kind of guidance from the Attorney General to not take enforcement actions. And they had a conversation. Supposedly it went well, and here we are, still in this uneasy detente. But when we talk about governments, when we, you know, just at the most foundational American principles, is the belief in the rule of law. And the every single day we have laws on the books that we don't enforce, it undermines the promise and certainty of America. And it's really time that we make these statutory changes and we end prohibition.
And Bill Barr has probably been so busy with uncovering DNC servers in the Ukraine or Italy that he has not gotten around to this as yet.
Yeah, no. Attorney General Barr has not talked about marijuana, to my knowledge, for one moment of his time in office. And I don't suspect he's going to prioritize it anytime soon.
So you did mention, and I wanted to ask you about that, it's still if state after state, now 11 states, but you cannot buy it in one state and take it to another state, correct?
Yeah. If you go and legally purchase marijuana in Oregon and then travel to California, you violate federal law when you cross that border, and you're violating the state laws too.
Right. We see with casinos that people will go from one state to another because their casino gambling may be illegal in their state, but they can. Is there evidence of a lot of cross-state, you know, intrastate traffic or interstate traffic like that?
Well, there's always been interstate trafficking of marijuana. You know, now the question is just were they products purchased legally or were they products purchased illegally? And you know, there is some runoff of that, but if anything, that only demonstrates the need for more states to reform. You know, we've seen a significant decline in illegal marijuana activities in the states that have reformed, but we still don't see their entire consumer economy of marijuana being purchased at state legal dispensaries. You know, we're talking about dragging an entire sector of the economy out of the shadows and putting it into a regulated marketplace. And that's why you still see, you know, estimates say about 40% of marijuana commerce in Colorado is still done on the unregulated market.
What states are next? Where are you the most hopeful to see change?
In the 2020 legislative session, we're looking predominantly at the Northeast, where states like New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, possibly Rhode Island, that could be flipping. We do have our second-tier states, which include places like Pennsylvania, New Mexico is also a top tier one state. The governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, just laid out a roadmap to get it done. But, you know, legislatively, we're still going to see some roadblocks. But I think that Illinois legalizing in 2019 could be later viewed as when the fever broke. When a state stepped up and said, we will be the first to legislatively enact a regulated marketplace, because to that point, it had all been done by ballot initiatives. So I think we could pick up another two to four states in the legislative session next year. And then at the ballot box, I mean, we could see as many as 10 states, 15 states on the ballot with initiatives, be it for medical use in places like Idaho or South Dakota, or Mississippi and Nebraska, to adult use in Arizona, Florida, and potentially others. So there's a lot of things going on. A lot of organizations are now working on these issues.
So I wanted to ask you about two real current public safety crises. The first being vaping.
Yeah.
Is this not just tobacco, but marijuana? And you know, how serious is it and what's being done about it?
Yeah. No, it's an incredibly serious issue. And it's an issue because we're seeing this emerging technology coming in and it is the unregulated products that are being correlated with these cases of illness and death. There are only two of the cases that have been outlined over 1,000 have had individuals who have been connected to the adult use, to a regulated adult use market. The rest of them, all unregulated products. And they're being tied. There's a vitamin E acetate issue where that's kind of a compound to thicken the gel to heavy metal contaminants. And this is simply a byproduct of the fact that this is an illegal market. If we legalize it, if we regulate it, then we won't have these types of problems, or at least we'll have a system that is in place to be able to address the issues. You know, when I go to a bar and I order a beer, I could say with 99.99% certainty that what's in that is not going to get me sick, right? And if it does, then there are mechanisms for me as a consumer to take action against that company. We don't have that in an illegal marketplace, and that's what we need.
Right. And the other is the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some reports that people are saying, don't take opioids, smoke pot.
Yeah.
Is this a real movement or?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm not a physician. I'm not ever going to tell someone to do one thing and not the other thing. But I can say, if you look at the emerging data that is coming out, and it seems like nearly a peer-reviewed report every week, that there is a strong correlation between the decline in opioid abuse, decline in opioid fatalities, and a connection with access to medical marijuana. You know, marijuana has been a tool in nature's medicine cabinet for our entire existence as a species. And I think that if for people, particularly those who suffer from issues like chronic pain, intractable epilepsy, PTSD, you know, neuropathy, et cetera, you know, marijuana could be something that they choose to do. Just as, you know, some people drink a hot glass of tea at night, you know, maybe the cannabis tea would help them sleep and replace sleeping pills. But it's something that is a case-by-case basis that needs to be a legal conversation that an individual can have with their doctor. And the state has no business as part of that conversation.
So I come from California, where marijuana has always been a major slice of the economy, underground until recently.
Yeah.
Overall, nationwide, the pot economy is pretty big, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a substance that has a built-in consumer base of about 13 to 14% of the population.
And so when you talk growing, distribution, now you're retail outlets, whatever they are.
A lot of jobs. A lot of jobs. I mean,
and I guess we could call them green jobs.
Killer Mike calls it the real Green New Deal. You know, depending on what numbers you look at, everyone has numbers. There's approximately 211,000 jobs in the legal cannabis marketplace right now. And that's everything from plant touching to the production of packaging to the graphic designers who are specializing in as ancillary services for cannabis companies. To put that in perspective, that is nearly three times the number of tax-paying American workers in the coal industry.
Whoa.
And when we think about the economic potential of this plant, be it marijuana or what we regard as hemp, you know, it's very real, very possible that it will be America's largest cash crop in the near future.
And is it 100% homegrown, or are we still importing?
The illicit market is still importing, but you know that is declining. The Cato Institute recently put out a report saying that one of the best things America could do to end drugs coming over the border is to legalize marijuana. And they cited cited reports showing a significant decrease in the amount of marijuana coming in on the western end of the Mexican border. And that's because we're dealing with patriotic American-grown marijuana right here at home.
So final question. What are your immediate goals, the things that you want to get done? And how can our listeners help?
So for at the federal level, the immediate goals are we have three tracks. One is in the Senate, where we're hoping to pass the Safe Banking Act after the coming off of the momentum that we had with the historic bipartisan vote just a couple months ago.
Okay. Mitch McConnell, are you listening?
Mitch McConnell.
Those Kentucky growers can grow pot as well as hemp.
Right? Oh, absolutely. And there's a with the governor's race in Kentucky, there's a very real possibility that we'll have a mm-hmm. medical marijuana friendly governor in the near future. In the House, we were focused on Chairman Nadler, chairman of the judiciary, introduced what's known as the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act, or MORE for short. He became the first ever judiciary chair to introduce a bill to end prohibition. It's already got 50 members of Congress on as co-sponsors, and it's our hope that we'll be able to get that bill out of committee either by the end of this year or in the first quarter of next year. But as you're well aware, the Judiciary Committee has a lot of things on its plate right now. So while we are understanding of the chairman's limited time, we are really vigorously pushing to get that as soon as possible out of committee. So that way we can have the full floor vote on it as well, and we can have members of Congress go on record where they stand. Should we maintain the status quo of criminalization and prohibition, or should we move towards legalization and regulation? And then at the White House, you know, there have been conversations that have been had with members of the DOJ and in the White House itself about what are the possibilities for the president to have that he could go should he so choose. And there's a lot of like really technical aspects of what would be needed to be done. And that's one of the things that they haven't dedicated a whole lot of time or attention to. But they are curious. So while I think it's unlikely, I think it is wholly possible that we could see something given the upcoming election.
And people who want to pitch mm-hmm. in or help at their yeah. at the state so, level or yeah. the federal level.
So how, one of how one of the reasons you?
What can they do?
Yeah, one of the reasons why we are at this moment where we have the majority of public support for marijuana is because of the work of people done by volunteers, activists, and advocates all around the country. We have over 150 chapters all around the country, from groups of five in a small town who regularly show up to their city council to Texas Normal, where they regularly turn out 700 people for statewide lobby days. So at normal.org, NORML.org, you can find a list of the chapters around the country. If there's not one near you, you can find out how to start one. Or you can just contact your lawmakers. We make it really easy. We have pre-written letters. You can edit it as you see fit and send it, just so that way you know in this representative democracy, you made an effort. You contacted your lawmakers and you said you support legalization, and you will be joining thousands and thousands and thousands of others who have done so already, and together we're going to get it done.
So a long way to go, but a yeah. lot of progress has yeah. been made in the last couple of years.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Yes. Yeah. Our slowest days today are busier than our busiest days were when I started here just a few years ago.
Justin, thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks Appreciate for your good work. And that's it for today's podcast. Thanks again to Justin Strako from Normal. Thanks to all of you for listening. And now, just one little favor, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the Bill Press Pod. And the way you do so, very easy. Just go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or TuneIn. Search for the Bill Press Pod, and you'll see it. You click right there to subscribe. And if you really want us to do us a favor, give us a big 5-star review. That really helps us get the word out. Also, ask you to check my Twitter feed at Bill Press Pod for news about any upcoming podcast, so you won't miss even one. Again, thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.